I'm Ryan Robertson.
And I'm Max Stiles.
And this is Missions Talk, brought to you by Nine Marks and Reaching and Teaching International Ministries. Nine Marks exists to equip church leaders with a biblical vision and practical resources for building healthy churches. To learn more about Nine Marks, visit ninemarks.org. Reaching and Teaching serves local churches by helping them send qualified missionaries to make mature disciples, establish healthy churches, and train local leaders around the world. You can find out more about Reaching and Teaching at rtim.org. In today's episode, we will be talking about the subject of short-term missions trips. This is a topic that comes up a lot in missions discussion. I've seen recent estimates that over $2 billion a year is spent on short-term missions trips. That's a huge number.
Get out of here. Oh, my word.
You may be wondering why Mac is so excited already, but it's because our guest is Leanne. Leanne Stiles is Mac's wife, and together they wrote a book on short-term missions. It's so good to have you, Leanne.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. It's good to be here.
Now, Leanne, we know you're Mac's wife, but can you tell us some other interesting parts of your biography?
Well, I have been Mac's wife for 44 years, so that's obviously a big part of who I am. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. I came to Christ at 16 through a youth group. And, you know, I didn't grow up thinking about missions. I didn't even know that folk went to other countries to share the gospel who hadn't heard it. I just heard about missions for the first time when I was in university. And I have to say that if you had told me as a 20-year-old that I would spend most of my adult life doing missions work, I simply wouldn't have believed you. But you know, following Christ is an adventure. I didn't know that he would lead me to go on dozens of short-term missions, or that we would do student ministry in Dubai for 16 years, or that we would spend 4 years in Kurdistan, where Mac pastored a church. And you know, I think God has, for some reason, particularly used us to start things. And that's short terms to new places, or pioneering university student ministry in the Middle East, or revitalizing a church in northern Iraq. And all of these things have been great privileges. Max say that over and over again, that they've been amazing things to see how God has taken our faltering steps and done just incredible things.
There's a really great story in the very beginning of your book on short-term missions, where it describes you having a conversation with Mac, where you finally just gave in and said, okay, Mac, I think the Lord wants us to go overseas and lead this trip. What is your experience since that point with short-term missions, Leanne?
Well, you know, the first time I considered my role was at a missions conference, a nationwide missions conference. And at the very end of that conference, Billy Graham, of all people, gave a call asking for a commitment to go. And Mac, who's the adventurous part of our family, jumped right up. And me, that's not so much me. But I did know that I wanted Jesus to be Lord of my life. And so I didn't want my fears and my misgivings to stop me from doing what he called me to do. So I told him that if he made it clear we were to go, I wouldn't say no. And then I stood up with Mac. And so that was part of what you're referring to when, you know, we were in our bedroom and I said to Mac, I think we're supposed to go, because the Lord had made that clear. You know, this led to an opportunity to direct a program in Kenya, and then all the trips that followed after that. And these trips had a profound influence on my life. We had intense immersion experiences where we lived for weeks with local people and just really joined in their lives. We encountered serious illnesses while overseas, including our children. We were in dangerous situations. We worked with corrupt officials. And yet, we saw God's faithfulness and care in all of those situations. And I think back of the hundreds of students that went with us and how these short-term trips were life-changing for them. And that's been so, so gratifying. And of course, I think, too, of the deep friendships with people across the world that we were able to form in these short-term trips.
So good. Mac, why write a book on short-term missions called A Guide to Short-Term Missions?
Well, when we wrote the book, there were not a lot of books about short-term missions, so that was part of it. Mm. And even before there were lots of short terms, I mean, $2 billion on short terms last year, I'm just still blown away by that statistic. We wanted to write a book that was about foundational things that undergird short-term missions. So both for the person on the short term and the person who leads the short term and kind of the ethos of a short term. So what we didn't want to do is write a handbook on what to pack or how to get your passports or things like that. We wanted to look at foundational biblical principles about short terms. And, you know, as you think about the biblical basis for short terms, we realize that there are numerous examples of biblical short terms in the Old Testament and in the New. And we wanted to write a book that would be helpful for long terms, no, not just short terms, but for long-term missions and really for the disciple of Christ. You know, we wanted principles to be in place for those who went on short terms to grow and develop as a follower of Jesus. So short terms can be super powerful in people's lives, but they can be done poorly too. So we wanted to correct things as well. And we saw poorly led short terms, and we saw really marvelous short terms. So, you know, in the end, Ryan, we wanted to elevate the low bar of success on short terms. You know, the low bar is 20 over, 20 back. You know, kind of, that's your baseline. And we wanted to take it to, we want short terms to be the biblical best of what a short term could do. Mm. So those are all reasons for writing the short-term missions guide.
It's infused with story after story. And it got me curious, Leanne, do you have any estimate on how many short-term trips that you and Mac have led throughout your lives? And is there any that stands out in particular?
Yeah, well, you know, Mac and I were trying to count this morning how many that was. We have led or co-led 5 trips to Kenya, 2 trips to Tunisia, 6 trips to Guatemala. We led 1 to work with immigrants in Florida, 1 to Palestine, 1 to Syria, and 1 to Kurdistan. At least that's what we remember. You know, and Mac, too, was asked to help start some short terms in some difficult places. So a couple of them, one was in Egypt with the garbage people. And then there's some places in Southeast Asia that are probably best left unnamed. So we didn't actually direct these, but did have a role in seeing them get started. As far as standout trips, I remember 2. First was our very first trip. And you have to know this was before fax machines. We were still writing those little, right? And those little paper thin blue things that you had to fold up and send via airmail. And I was scared to death. I was just so frightened. You know, I don't like to fly. I was a new mom taking a 4-month-old infant, and I was still trying to figure out how to be a mother, much less take a baby overseas. I didn't know what our living situation was going to be like. And then the most scary part was probably that we were in charge of 15 students who were just as frightened as I was. But, you know, God was so gracious again, as he always is.
Again, you know, this is sort of before short terms. You know, we didn't have a lot of models for what we're doing.
And stuff. Yeah. Hardly anyone was doing it.
In the 80s.
So like Max said, not only did we return with a low bar or as many students as we left with, but we just saw some incredible things that God was doing in Kenya. The second trip that really stands out to me is one of our trips to Guatemala. And we were in a really remote village. And even though Guatemala was probably, as far as miles, the closest country that we ever directed a short term, and it was seemed to be the most remote because the place we went was so hard to get to. It was a site of the Civil War in Guatemala. There wasn't any active fighting at that time, but it was before the peace accords were signed, and so it was a bit dangerous. I remember we went to the place with a military escort, And it was a really sad place. Over a third of the adult population had been killed in the fighting. So there were lots of orphans, and there were desperate people without much hope and without much help. And we held dying babies in our arms. Our son Tristan held one. But, you know, on that trip, I was able to use my skills as a pharmacist to work in a clinic with a nurse. She diagnosed, and I prescribed and filled prescriptions. But more importantly, we were able to be a part of evangelistic outreaches and bring the hope of the gospel to that place. And we were able to encourage the saints who are already at work in there, in that place.
So, Mac, why should local churches consider sending short-term teams overseas? Speaking to the pastors out there.
Well, of course, the Great Commission is not just a nice idea. It's a command. And the command is given to the church primarily, not so much to individuals as much as to the church. So short terms are a part of being faithful to the Great Commission, you know, so kind of foundationally. And but also, I'd say it helps the church have God's heart for the world. You know, if we don't understand God's heart for the world, we're in danger of seeing God as a small regional God, not the God of the universe. And we miss the big picture for who he is. So short-term missions help us see that Jesus is Savior, Lord, and hope of the world. So, hey, look, when Jesus whipped the sellers out of the temple, Jesus' comments in Mark 11 is that this is God's house that was a place of prayer for all nations. He's quoting out of Isaiah 56. And Jesus saw that the religious leaders had set up shop in the place of the temple that was reserved for the non-Jews to pray, the outer court, and that they had missed God's heart for the world. It was beyond the Jews. So it's no wonder they couldn't see Jesus for who he was when he shows up, and it's no wonder Jesus was so angry. When we develop a missions mindset, it aligns our hearts with God's heart. So, I mean, there's a lot of other good reasons to send short-termers, but you got to get that one down first.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think all three of us have just experienced short-term trips that the Lord has used to light our hearts aflame for the world.
Oh, absolutely.
For his glory being made known to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
Leanne, you talk in the book about bringing your kids on trips and knowing your three sons, now they're all adults. What were some of the benefits that you see now of bringing your boys with you when they were younger on short-term trips?
Yeah, well, I think it made the world real to them. It wasn't just a geography lesson in school. And it made it a less scary place. And, you know, I think it became something our family did. It just became kind of a normal part of our family culture, so to speak. You know, some kids spent their summers learning to swim and playing baseball, and we did short terms, and our kids didn't really think that much about it. And I think that really prepared them when we decided to go long term. It wasn't that weird. They were well prepared. They felt comfortable being in other countries. And I think, you know, one of the benefits that they have now is that they learn to live cross-culturally. And so they can reach out to different cultures that they come in contact with here with compassion and some bit of understanding. But, you know, the biggest thing was that two of our sons became Christians on short-term mission trips. Tristan was in Guatemala, and he heard Guatemalans talk about their hardships and persecution and the difficult things that they had lived through, and yet their faith in Christ was so strong, and that made him convinced that the gospel was true. And so he put his faith in hope in Christ in the highlands of Guatemala. And a similar story, a little bit different with Isaac. He came to Christ in India. He was on a short-term mission trip to India with his youth group. And during that trip, someone asked him to give his testimony. And that was what the Lord used to kind of challenge him to think, you know, being a Christian is not just growing up in a Christian home. And it's not just, you know, doing something good in like going on a short term. It means having a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so that's the point where Isaac, you know, repented of his sins and put his faith and hope in Christ, just like his brother had done, you know, a couple of years ago. So I think, you know, when you ask that question, that's for us just such a blessing that the Lord used those trips in their lives.
Man. Mac, in your guide to short-term missions, you write this. I'm assuming it's you because it sounds like you and not Leah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
One of the biggest problems facing the church about short-term missions is a foundational problem. Many people involved in missions are missing God's heart for the world. So the reason I think it's you is you've got all of these thesis statements about things like this. So yeah, Mac, what do you mean by that statement?
Yeah, you're right. You smoke me out because you know me. I think I'm getting at some of the things that concern us about bad short terms, that there's a lot of bad reasons to go on short term. Some people want to make God love them for doing something hard, or I had a parent, this is more a parent than one of the students that took us, I had a parent call me on the phone and say, I really want my son to go on this short term. And I don't know why, I just asked why. And she said, well, because he doesn't realize how good he's got it here in America. And I want him to see how good he's got it in America. And I was like, well, that's not really why we go on short terms. You know, it's true, you know, in some ways, if you don't know the Lord. And a lot of people just want the adventure. I think more people want the adventure experience of cross-cultural situations. I mean, even non-Christians see the value in that. So, I mean, others want affirmation from others or just because a group is going. I mean, there's a lot of bad reasons. So when I say there's a foundational problem, let me back up. Let me emphasize that most people don't go for bad reasons. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons. It's more to get the reasons in order. And we want to be faithful to the Great Commission. You know, we want to be true to God's word and his love for the world. So it's a matter of putting that first, understanding our obedience and response to what God has done for us. Our obedience comes out of this amazing thing that Jesus has done for us in the gospel, that he saved us to live for him. And part of living for him is a concern for the world. So the first order is to know and love Jesus and respond to him in faithfulness to the Great Commission, and not let the other things kind of fall in place. Because it is an adventure, and you do live, you know, risking your life on Christ increases your faith in powerful ways. And so we do want those things to happen. More about order for that statement.
That's why you used the word foundational.
Foundational.
The first order.
To build on that. Right.
That's right. So, Leanne, do you recommend a church who's thinking about short-term trips to consider going to the same location repeatedly? And if so, what are some of the benefits of that repetitiveness?
Well, definitely, yes. And I think most of the benefits have to do with building relationships over years and not just over a couple of weeks. Mm. And that brings just incredible opportunities and benefits. For one, I think when we did that, when we went back repeatedly, we were able to offer better training for cultural sensitivity to that particular place. And we also were able to decide, you know, what would be required of the person, of the participant who went. Like in Kenya, we lived really ruggedly, you know, could they do that? In the Middle East, we required a really high spiritual maturity, and our hikes in Guatemala required physical stamina. So that really helped us narrow in on the right people. I think it also, you know, there's some people go on short terms as just a sense of that they want to see the world. And that's not a bad thing. But I think when you go to the same place repeatedly, you focus on the people and serving them and not just kind of on the exotic things around you in the culture. I think some other benefits are we were able to see good things come out of, say, building projects that we did. We could go back the next year and see, you know, the progression of the building or actually see it in use. And the same thing with, you know, our evangelistic outreaches, which were even more exciting than building a building. We'd be able to go back and see even more people who had come to Christ over the year or so that we were gone. And that was really encouraging to feel like we were just a small part of seeing God work in that part of the world. Mm. Another thing, we saw a connection growing between alumni of the trip, particularly if students from their university went on the project a year later. They were able to keep up relationships with people, you know, send notes or letters or get back in contact with them.
Mm. Yeah.
And then I think just God's graciousness in using short terms to call people into a long-term commitment to missions. And we saw, by God's grace, a number of our students become long-term people serving overseas.
Yeah, yeah, many, many benefits, many benefits. I remember we went to the same First Nations reservation up in Northern Canada year after year for a few years. And there's an expectancy and an enjoyment of being with people that you have grown to love, knowing that you'll see them again. And yeah. Also, honestly, the hardship of hearing elders in the community who have died grieving people that you have grown to love. Mm-hmm. I would highly, highly encourage folks to think about just repetitive visits when they're helpful. Yeah. Mac, you write a lot about cultural training in the book. I think you've got a few chapters that are dedicated to this. Some great stories, as always. What are some issues that you think can either build or break trust in another culture when it comes to short terms teams? And what should people consider about culture?
Yeah, so it's about attitude, right? I mean, if you go with the attitude of being a servant and a learner, you're going to build trust. We encourage that at every short term we've ever done. Be a servant and a learner in other cultures, and not just the local people. Of course, that's the primary, but to the missionaries that you're with or serving alongside, or other believers you would meet, build trust that way. So eat the food, live with the people, take public transportation, and even though it's a short term, take a stab at the language, learn greetings, learn what it's like to go beyond just a couple greetings. You know, take risks and those things. They all build trust. If you go with a patronizing attitude, you're going to break trust. I mean, I know that sounds simple, but it's so much in us. I can't remember if I told this in the book or not, but we went to Guatemala, and we went, like Leanne said, we went to the highlands of Guatemala, up in the site of the Civil War. It was just really rugged. It took most of the day to get there on a chicken bus. We would get a chicken bus pretty much right off. A chicken bus is what the Guatemalans would call their bus transportation. And we got off the plane, we get on a chicken bus, and this young woman from University in California turns to me and said, where are the guys that loaded up our luggage? I don't see them on the bus. I said, oh, they're up on top of the bus, which is where those guys went, you know? So she said, isn't that dangerous? I said, yeah, it's incredibly dangerous. She said, tell them to get down from there. And I said, we don't show up off the plane, start telling people what to do. This is their place. This is what they do. And as much as I would prefer them to get off the top of the bus and come ride with us, this is what they've been doing all their lives. And that's not how we start out. So, you know, and she was good about that. She was like, oh, yeah, we don't see that in ourselves often. So it's so important to check our attitudes, our understandings, our Western kind of mindsets often about what's right or wrong. I think in the end, it just boils down to that, having the right attitude when we go as servants and learners. I don't know if you'd say anything to that, Leanne. Is that anything else come to mind?
Yeah, I think that's so true, that it's so easy to what we call, I don't know, red line, where you start to, you know, be critical of a culture rather than trying to build trust and build relationships. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so important.
All right. So I'm going to tell you all a little story about when I redlined in Northern Canada.
Oh, yeah. We'd love
I feel like this is a confession moment. So it's our second trip up to this First Nations reservation up in Canada. And again, love these people. And they had invited us to go camping with them. So to go camping with Aboriginal people is a tremendous privilege and treat. And we were so excited about this. And we packed up all of our camping stuff and tents. And we get to this community. And it's like you had to take a two-hour bush plane into this community. And then we ended up on the shores. And they wanted to go canoeing. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We get to go canoeing, to go camping? This is amazing. And they put us in a boat with teenagers. And I'm like, man, I cannot wait to find out how to canoe properly because I've been doing it wrong, I'm sure, all these years. And the students didn't know how to canoe that we were with, these First Nations kids. And I just remember just that first hint of a red line that you're talking about, Leanne, creeping into my heart. And so we get out there in the canoes, they're aluminum, and I'm looking at a storm that's coming in. And here is our church group in a storm. And lightning's coming towards us. And my co-leader, good friend Ruth, looks at me panicked about 150 yards away in another canoe. And thankfully, the storm missed us. We would have been just in so much trouble. We found out later that it barely missed us. And I remember sitting in the back of the canoe because I thought I would sit in the front of the canoe because this young kid was going to be able to get me there. No, I had to get him there. And I remember watching him eating raw hot dogs and drinking Sprite as I ferried him across. And it was honestly probably one of the lowest parts of my own heart in the area of missions. Just, it was not in a good place. We get to this community. It is mosquito infested, this campground, right? No one lived there permanently. It's mosquitoes everywhere. I think Erin, my wife, counted about 200 bites on her legs the next morning. We slept on logs that were not cut out properly, and it was just miserable. And it got to the point where 2 days later, after some incredible experiences, we got to make bread with these ladies with our hands and fry it over open fires. Just incredible. We got to share the gospel time and time and time again, and I preached several times, and it was just an encouragement. But that red line finally showed up to the point where a couple of ladies jumped in a canoe on the last day, Erin being one of them, along with Ruth. And they could not wait a few more hours. They were sick. They were tired. They couldn't cope any longer. And they just started to set off, and they had no idea where they were canoeing to. But that's just how hard things got for them over those 48 hours. And I remember a couple hours after they left, it dawned on me, my wife has jumped in a canoe in the middle of Northern Canada. And we're talking bears and wild animals all over the place. I don't know where she is.
Yeah.
And you just talk about what you learn about yourself in those types of cross-cultural experiences. Right. It matters. Mm-hmm. It matters. And we've learned a ton. We've told that story to so many people with a lot of laughter now, but man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's how it is, Ryan. You the cross-cultural things that are hard are the unanticipated things that you can't foresee. The things you can live through a lot of stuff, especially if you know it's coming. But it's those things like you're outlining in your own experiences that you just push us into the red line, which is going to happen. You know, everyone goes through culture shock. The key is, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with that? How do you process that culture shock?
Yeah. How do I deal with my heart?
Yeah.
So Leanne, you've seen a number of people return home from trips. You've already talked about, you bring out 20, you bring back 20. So you've seen those groups of 20s come back time and time and time again. What are ways that you've specifically seen individuals struggle when they return home from a short-term trip as they assimilate back into their home culture?
Yeah. You know, it's not just watching other people do it. I struggled myself a lot coming back. And, you know, a short term is such an intense experience. You live just so much life and see so many incredible things in just a couple of weeks. And then you come back home and you're with people who've just been living their regular lives. They haven't had that much change like you have. I remember being back in the U.S. and somebody just casually asking me, you know, how was your summer? And me launching into this, you know, kind of day by day description of, you know, what had happened overseas. And, you know, about, I don't know, 3 or 4 days in, I could see they're a little bit uncomfortable. And, you know, they excuse themselves to go, you know, get a drink. And, you know, I think there's two extremes that people come back with. One is just kind of I'm just going to pick up with my normal life again. You know, I'm not going to be any different than I was before. You know, I've done my thing for missions and now I can go on with my life. That's kind of one extreme. The other extreme is to kind of think, America's bad. You know, we've got it all wrong. Nobody understands me and nobody understands what I've been through. And so I'm just going to get mad and isolate myself. So, you know, those two extremes. Obviously, we don't want a red line when we come back to our culture either. And so I think some things that I've learned over the years is to just do some simple things like ask a friend, you know, intentionally, let's set up a time. I'd love to share, you know, my experience with you. Do you have, you know, an hour or so that we could sit down together? So he found those kind of friends, going over my journals and reminding myself of the Lord's faithfulness and the things that he taught me over the summer, keeping up with people there through, you know, email or whatever, and keeping up with team members too, you know, reminding mm-hmm. each other of things that the Lord had done in our lives. And then lastly, we talked about this before, go again.
Yeah,
that's good. Mac, you advocate for forming partnerships with long-term missionaries who are serving overseas as you consider short-term trips. Any tips you'd like to share on how to do that well?
Yeah, find a missionary, a strategic place who's willing to take you on. Mm. Find a missionary who's focused on the church and gospel centrality. It's not that mercy ministries can't be good things for short-terms and can be helpful, but it's good to have a missionary as a guide in those situations. Partner with their local church if that's an option in the local context. Stay with them over time, like Leanne said. We treasure the relationships we built with people over time, our partnerships with them. And we learn so much from them too. You know, we can't get over the spiritual lessons that we learn from our good missionary partners overseas. So yeah, be open to their instruction and guidance. And then resist the temptation to see the world on short-term missions and going to different places, go back to the same place over again. Short-term missions with a long-term view is what we say. I'd say those would be important tips. Read the book.
That's good.
read the Mac and Leanne's guide. So
there you go. Leanne, when we're talking about local churches going on short-term mission trips, sometimes parachurch ministries organize short-term trips and members of churches choose to go on those parachurch trips. What involvement should a local church have with their members who are wanting to go with a parachurch organization on a short-term trip?
Yeah, I'd say it's just a wonderful opportunity both to invest in that person or persons in your church, also an opportunity to get the church excited about, you know, a mission trip to that particular part of the world. So, yeah, I would hope the church would be involved from the very beginning, you know, that they would kind of do their homework, find out about the organization. If you don't know it, figure out exactly what they're going to be doing on that trip, who's leading the trip, and, you know, help the person know if it's a good fit for them. And then after they decide, be encouraging, tell the church, help them prepare, support them financially if you're in that kind of place. Pray, share updates while they're gone. And I think, you know, giving them time when they return to give a report is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. It's encouraging to the church and it helps them with what we talked about earlier, that process of reentry into a culture and doing that well. But, you know, it's also a two-way street. So that person who's going with, you know, another agency, they need to talk to their church leaders and let them know that, you know, they want the church involved. It's, you know, it's a bad idea just to stand up at a church meeting and ask for prayer the week before you go when nobody else knows that you're even going. And it's a, not a great idea to show up in the church office and ask for money. And, you know, don't forget to tell the pastor you need a reference. And then he, you know, gets something in an email and he's like, what? So, I, you know, it's a two-way street. And I think we, yeah, need to think through that.
Leanne, that's such good wisdom. Such good wisdom. Mac, you guys wrote this book over 20 years ago. You've had more short-term experience since then, and you've lived overseas since then. If you were to write with Leanne the 2.0 guide to short-term missions, anything you'd include?
Yeah, I think I definitely focus more on the church, more of the role in the church, like Leanne just outlined, really. Maybe we wrote with the assumption that you would do that, that you would be involved in the church or involved in church planting. But I think I'd encourage people to be bold and clear with the gospel more. You know, it's if the missionary gives direction for you to share your faith and tells you in certain situations, this is a good time to talk about your faith, be bold and clear. Short-termers can be very shy about sharing the gospel with people at times. And I understand, you know, they're in another situation. But I think I'd talk about that a little more in 2.0, Mac and Leanne's Guide to Short-Terms 2.0. But I'd want people to, I mean, this is what I've learned. I've learned how different short-terms are than long-terms. So when we left for the Middle East, we could not go back to our lives. You know, this is the main difference between short-terms and long-terms in some ways, if you have the foundations right. With short terms, you always get to go back to your life. You know, you go back to the same place, you go back to your home, you go back to your friends. In a long-term mission, you don't get to do that. You uproot your life such that you can't go back to it. And there needs to be a lot more understanding of that and the implications of that on the part of short-termers as they view long-term missions. So I think I'd maybe do some write a little bit more about how to be sensitive, more sensitive to long-term folk for those on a short term. But by and large, as Leanne and I have kind of gone over the book, we feel like it's a really helpful guide.
It is.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon and you can get a Kindle version, as I recently purchased a Kindle version because I was on a trip and I didn't have my hard copy on me. Leanne, anything else to add to what Max just shared?
Yeah, I think kind of what he ended with is I think I would add more about working with long-term people. I think it's, you know, sometimes we forget that helping out with a short-term is kind of an extra added on to what they're supposed to be doing or what they're about and can have too high of expectations for their involvement. So just being more sensitive to that kind of thing, being more sensitive to actually trying to figure out what is helpful for them and not what just is extra work for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super helpful. Well, friends, as you're listening, this is one of what we hope is just a number of different episodes of Missions Talk that hits on short-term missions as we've just found out today, over $2 billion in the Western world being spent going on these trips. I think we want to spend those dollars well and honestly not spend some of those dollars, if we're to be honest, not going on unhelpful trips. So we'll be talking about just training up a team to go on a short-term trip. We'll talk about different types of short-term work that can happen and really with an emphasis on how to keep the church in the center of all that we're thinking about as it relates to short-term missions. As always, you can hit up Mac or I at mailbag@rtim.org with any of your questions on Missions Talk. That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for your time.
For more articles, books, and podcasts, please visit 9marks.org.